This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 766, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands and wearing their masks. You know, getting through it. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 766. I am Josh Flanagan, and I am here with my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Connor, how
Hello.
How are you?
Getting through it, Josh.
Yeah.
only way we know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow.
Still standing. I'm right here, you sons of bitches.
Yeah, you know, up and down. Up and down.
We are iFanB is our sister site. It's a spelling bee show that we do, FanB. Yeah. Every week we read our stack of comics.
Spell Sienkiewicz.
Sienkiewicz. S-I-E-N-K-E-V-I-C-Z. Sienkiewicz.
I think that's right.
If I was writing it, I'd be okay. I got to say it out loud. That's hard.
I understand.
If there was a writing spelling bee, I think I would really excel. Unless the word was bureaucracy, which...
I can't never spell that.
I can't deal with it. We will talk... The pick of the week is the book that we like the best from the week. We're going to talk about that book and other books, the patron pick and mail. It is an oasis of erudite... Well, it is. Well, it's a little erudite, but it's still distraction.
Don't set the bar too high.
It's low key intellectual distraction. It's not like watching reality TV.
I'll allow it.
But it's not like watching Nova.
It's not PBS here.
It's not. And listen, a lot of PBS stuff's a little overrated. Just because you're talking a British accent,
this isn't Frontline.
Better. Yeah. No, obviously Frontline's amazing, and you know, but there's some rough American experiences out there. Let's be honest.
Sure.
Because there's no... Anyway. You know what? Let's diverge strongly. There's the spoilers for the comic books. Connor, you had the pick. Oh, my God.
Wow. The peak. You had this problem last week, too.
I'm developing a French accent.
All right.
Do I have a peak?
This was a weird week. There was not a ton of books. but some fun ones. But the clear winner was Hellblazer, Rise and Fall, Book 3, Tom Taylor, Derek Roberts, and Diego Rodriguez, Deron Bennett. And this is, I know every issue of this has been Pick of the Week. This is the final issue.
Really?
You picked the ones, I picked it twice. I don't think it's happened since Airboy, but I'm not positive.
I read this probably early on Wednesday. I think this was the first thing that I read, and I was maybe a third of the way through it, and I was like, there's your pick right there. I don't even mean my pick. I was like, that's his pick. That's like, it's done. And at a certain point, I was like, you finished? You're like, oh, about halfway. I was like, have you read Hellblazer? No? I'll wait here.
So, yeah, I mean, I saved it towards the end because I'm most excited for it. And this is the conclusion to the three-part story in which John is dealing with a childhood tragedy, a demon who has inhabited the kid who he accidentally killed as a friend. Let me back up here. His friend accidentally died when he was a kid.
Because of his magic dealings.
Well, he drowned in a river overrun that John accidentally caused, and then John tried to resurrect him and instead caused a demon to inhabit him. And so he's dealing with that. The demon is killing rich people in London. That's been the sort of murders in the background. And so John has teamed up with the devil, and his old childhood friend is now a cop, and Chaz, because this is like the new continuity.
It's a better world in which Chaz is alive.
And they're trying to stop the demon. And this was just, it's been incredibly fun. It's been funny. It's been dark. It's been light. It's been all kinds of things. There's been fun romance between the devil and John, and you know, creepy demon stuff. This has just been a hell of a fun ride. And you know, between this book and the Hellblazer series by Cy Spurrier, I've become, you know, like a Hellblazer guy this past year.
Yeah, it's true.
Which has been a lot of fun. I've always, you know, liked the character, but I haven't read him at this regularly ever. So this has been a lot of fun. The devil stuff was terrific. If it's just the devil and John hanging out with his buddies at a pub, it could have been Pick of the Week. Mm-hmm. And then you add in the layer of his father here.
Oh my God.
Where John has to go back to his childhood home to deal with his dad and their relationship. And that was really great too. And it turns out his feelings about his relationship with his dad were the sort of secret weapon to defeat the demon, and an extended tribute to Liverpool. So the football club, and it was really fun.
Yeah. I mean, as I sort of flip through it now, I'm looking at all of these scenes that, like, many of them on their, like the plan that Constantine and the devil have to you know, trick the demon into moving to somebody else and try to save the kid, and just all of the things. You know, then you see the giant, you know, and he's a demon. He's a giant, mm-hmm, muscular, horned, goat-legged, you know, red-winged, you know.
Like we think of, yeah.
Yeah, in this instance, I think that's sort of very big. Even the devil has sort of just the traditional devil look, but, you know, it worked. So
nice cut suit.
Yep, it's true.
English cut.
But boy, the whole scene, I mean, it was the three pages with the father, four, five pages with the father that really sealed it for me, because I thought, you know what, in all of this time and the Hellblazer stuff I read, I don't remember this happening. I don't remember a scene with his dad that wasn't like a flashbacky thing. I was like, oh, he's alive. Then it's just this guy who comes to the door, and the devil's like, huh, I thought there'd be more of you, more to you, you know, and like just little bits like that. And his dad's a prick, and he smacks him and on a page turn, and that really works out well. And then the devil takes him in the other room, and then the dad comes out, and he's like, I'm really sorry, I was wrong about everything. And it's just this, it's a little like Ghostbusters 2, that the way that they defeat it is with good feeling. So in that, they use Your Love Is Lifting Me Higher and the Statue of Liberty walking down the street. This, he leads the devil and a John who just felt great about what just happened with his dad to the football pitch where he felt the best, and that's how they defeat the demon, and then John gets fucking angel wings.
It was a lot.
It was a lot, and that's not even, and then it wasn't even over. No. If I have any tiny argument or complaint to make about it, the only sort of loose end, which they did, like the kid who had been possessed by a demon and therefore was now not back aged alive. For 40 years. That was kind of an afterthought. Yeah, we gave him to his family. They're fine with it. And I was like, all right, we're just not going to worry about that.
Yeah, whatever. They thought their kid was dead for 40 years and he's still 8, so yep. Okay. And what kind of trauma has he been? Because he was alive in there.
Yeah, that kid's not okay.
No, but that's not John's problem.
Yeah. Although it is
John's problem, which is not means it's not John's problem.
Yeah, which is very John.
The Derek Robertson stuff is so evocative. He, you know, he has that style. Everyone's a little dirty, big eyes. You feel like everybody smells really bad. And
a little drunk.
There's one terrific bit that I laughed at for a good minute where they go out drinking. He and Chaz and his old friend, and they just sort of dump Chaz at the door of his house and passed out. He's like, it's fine. And then Chaz's wife opens the door, and this is the look on John's face. and the panel is, oh, no. He's just like, no demon has ever scared John that much as Chaz's wife opening that door. And it's just the cigarette hanging down off his lips, the bug eyes, the oh, no caption, I just laughed for a good minute. It's a great drawing.
Yes.
Derek Robertson's amazing.
Well, to talk about him, you know, it's kind of shocking that he's not a British artist.
Yeah.
In that like, the way that he does stuff, like there's no way that he didn't come up on a steady diet of 2000 AD or something like that, because this is like the way that he draws. I think him and Steve Dillon are two of the best people at drawing drunk people. It's very subtle, but there's a lean, there's a very slight, like there's the eyes that are like, hey, what's going on, you know, like it's hard to put a finger on, but as you flip through the last sort of chunk of these pages, it's right there, the half lids, you know, the general sort of like everything's gonna be fine contentedness, you know, he does that, he does angry, he does creepy, you know, as far as folks who, if you look in the pub, actually all the people standing around them, you know, like he's captured what that is like.
Yeah.
And you know, his acting, you know, his sort of character, not just anatomy, but like his body language and his faces, you know, on top of the fact that, you know, his storytelling and composition, like he's an all around great artist. Now, he doesn't look like Alan Grant or, you know, John Byrne. He doesn't have that. He's got this other thing that, when properly applied, it is just the best. And I think that every time, sometimes he'll go on a mainstream book. I think he did Wolverine for a little while, and it's kind of because he just seems out of place there. Like he needs to be doing stuff that fits his. That's why if you read like Transmetropolitan, it's perfect. You know, his work is perfect. You know, and in this, his work is perfect. It's just he needs to be paired with the right story, and he will shine. And here he did.
Yeah, you can look through any of these pages and you can tell what the characters are all thinking without reading the dialogue because the face acting.
Yeah, with just enough sort of exaggeration, you know, to communicate it in comic book form. But never
there's a lot of artists who just have a face and the characters they draw have that face no matter what they're doing, if they're happy or sad or crying or and that's all right, but Derek Robertson, his faces tell the character stories. He's incredible, and this book is good because of Robertson as much as it is Tom Taylor's 100%. Script, who is, you know, continues his run right now of great work. And the opening scene is, you know, shocking. It's all he's very good. This book was delayed a bit.
Who cares?
This issue was delayed a bit, so I had to sort of ramp back up to remember a little bit of not the overall story, but the details.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really that hard.
I mean, if this is the this is the work that you're going to get out of it. He inked himself, too, and that always hasn't been a walk in the park. But his inks with the Diego Rodriguez colors, just it all sort of worked together. A lot of times I feel like his inking is too heavy on the page. So where you had on Transmetropolitan, you had, who's the dude?
Rodney Ramos.
Rodney Ramos, who just made all of it. Just shine. He smoothed it out where it needed to be, but left it rough where it wasn't. This is grittier, and he's normally grittier, but it works perfectly. I can't say enough nice things about it.
On page 9 of your digital reader, I guess in white collar jail the bars are really far apart, so you could just slip right through them. I guess that's.
Well, they assume that the white collar people are all fat on their own.
Like that guy, he's not getting through them, but no. The bars radically change there. sides paint to paint like that. Where he's talking to John, they're really far apart, and the next page, they're really close together.
That's right.
That's fun. Anyway, this was terrific. It's really fun. You don't have to be a big Hellblazer fan to enjoy this story. No. It tells you everything you need to know, which including it'd be great to have the devil on your team.
It would.
Because the devil doesn't really overdo it, only uses his abilities, you know, at the right moments.
He's no amateur.
Right.
He's not.
God, the scene with the dad was so great. Everything from the dad on was just terrific.
And, it wasn't bad before that. But man, you know, beginning, middle, and end of the story. It's funny, I think that we talked about Tom Taylor. Like, it's great when he has these whole worlds to build. We got three issues of this, and he did the thing.
Yeah, I mean, because it's what we talked about. It's the classic version, right? It's not, this is a Black Label book, so it's out of continuity. Not that there really is a Hellblazer continuity right now, but, you know, it's just the classic Hellblazer story. It's doesn't worry about anything.
So
it's great.
Here's the thing that I've, anybody knows Tom wants to put him in touch with me, that'd be fine. Just saying. Because it's, you know, I maybe have tried. I don't know.
You'd like to talk with him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So I didn't read this book till after the pick because you had put it into the script.
Yeah.
But you could have made a case for King of Black, Black Knight number one to be the pick of the week.
Right?
Simon Spurrier, who just mentioned, Jesus Says, Corey Pettit. And this is a one-shot King of Black tie-in featuring the Black Knight, who, as we mentioned, every time the Black Knight shows up, was one of my favorite characters as a kid. And he was a mainstay in the Roger Stern Avengers era in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s. And I always loved him. I don't know why. He's just a knight with a cool black sword called the Ebony Blade. I didn't know anything about it. They didn't really play up the Ebony Blade too much back then.
No.
Just that it was a cool black sword. This guy was wearing a cool knight outfit. And, you know, I was a kid. Knights were cool. So I always liked him. And here they really sort of delve into the he's kind of the Booster Gold character, I think.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right.
He's kind of a doofus. He's kind of a bro who's got this power because it's the family lineage to carry that Ebony Blade, which we were always told was a corrupting influence. The wielder of the blade got bloodthirsty. Again, this was not something that was dealt with in the 80s. This seems to be
It's
modern.
Been around for a little bit, but only tangentially. Like I only feel like I was sort of very partially aware of it, if anything.
Yeah, and so then here we find out that it's not the blade that's the corruption. It's the family lineage and sort of I don't want to say mental illness, but whatever is in the Whitmans is the actual force of psychosis, not the blade.
Yeah.
Anyway, this was super fun. that dark psychology aside, this was super fun, I thought.
Yeah, it was kind of like the best of a really good Moon Knight episode. Like in a way, like, you know, they kept saying, you're Avengers adjacent. And he's right. Like, I was an Avenger, you know, and he just like,
for a long time.
He just doesn't get the respect. You know, I've really come around to the fact that while I'm not at all invested in the King in Black storyline as a thing, and I don't need to, you know, if you keep your eyes open, there's still some gems in here. And I think we've started to find them.
You like Thunderbolts, and I appreciate that you're willing to dip in the water. I keep just seeing the title and moving on, which I shouldn't.
It's odd because I'm that way with the future state. I'm like, I'm not doing that, you know. But
and it is funny. I will say that for one moment, I looked at it because I was like, oh, Black Knight. And then I just kept going.
I just saw it was a number one. Then I saw that Cy Spurrier wrote it, and I go, I've always kind of been interested in this character. Maybe it'll be good. And right away, you know, from step one, it was entertaining and compelling. And, you know, this guy trying to figure out where he fits in. And then at the end, it actually not entirely unlike like Ant-Man in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of got that thing going on where he's like, well, I guess I have to do the right thing, even though I know I'm not qualified, you know. But I had thought I was qualified. And you know, he's sort of been on both sides of good and bad, you know, and made some, you know. And then he ends up is he actually in China?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's with two Chinese heroes fighting a dragon, you know, and they're talking to each other in Chinese, like, what is with this dude? But the lady's kind of like, come on, he was Avenger. He's okay. He's trying, you know. And there's another guy, the sword master, you know, and he's got a whole sword thing going on too. And it was just, it was a lot of fun. It's funny because if you look, there's a whole joke about narration where like there's this real arch sort of medieval narration going on, and you realize that's been him talking out loud the whole time, narrating what he's saying, and they can all hear him.
Right.
And you know, if you look at the pages, they are covered in words. Like the lettering in dialogue is expansive, and most of the time that's a bad sign. But I didn't notice it until I'm looking at it now, sort of without reading it. You know, Simon Spurrier has been hit or miss for me for a while, but he's been much more hit lately. You know, it reminds me of Kieran Gillen, where at first I was like, I don't know what this guy's on about, and then after some good, like whoever saw that in them earlier, were like, if we polish this up. It's, you know, they've got greatness in them. And you know, we've seen a lot of greatness out of Simon Spurrier recently. And this was another funny show. Also, you know, like, it's a comic book show. Jesus Saiz, just beautiful art.
Yeah.
The coloring on top of it has sort of, actually, he did all the art. So it's just a delight to look at. And you know, had some big comic book action, you know, big monsters, huge swords, that scale we all love. It just feels like the null thing. Every book that I've read has some sort of revelation about null that is significant to the characters that are in it. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of get by on that enough that I don't know how significant this is to the larger story. And I'm guessing there's got to be some conflict with that. But I guess if he's everywhere all at once, it doesn't really matter.
Well, the idea in here is that only the Ebony Blade can really hurt Null. Now, will that be true? Who knows? But or really, really hurt Null. So we'll find out. I did laugh at the mural in his bedroom over his bed of the other Avengers sort of worshiping him. It was in a very sort of you know, romance style painting.
I thought that was really funny, but then I thought it got much funnier when I looked closer and there's sword slashes everywhere. That was the part that got me. Like he cut the blankets and there's sword slashes through the art. He's in his like teenage boy room with all that stuff going on. It was delightful. It really was.
And you can see his 80s costume. The one from he's an old character. Yeah. He came around in the 60s, I think.
I think so, yeah.
So you can see the 60s costume, and then the terrible 90s one where he wears a leather jacket over his costume. God, I had the 90s. So bad.
The leather jackets were way overdone back then.
Yeah, so this was cool. And then, I mean, look, it's just a big adventure. He gets called to a quest to fight Null, and then he gets attacked. And then I guess he was flying a long way because he lands in China and then teams up with some Chinese heroes and they fight the demons. And it's a pretty simple plot overall, but it's a fun one and it's full of great character stuff. You don't know a lot about the Black Knight. You can learn a lot here, which is good because there's going to be a new Black Knight series because Jon Snow is playing him in the movie. So where's the name? The Curse of the Ebony Blade. Black Knight, Curse of the Ebony Blade coming soon.
So well, I hope it's like this.
Well, Simon Spurrier is writing it.
I'm at the movie, but that's fine. Oh. If he's writing the book, well, then I'm in.
He's in the Eternals movie, so who knows?
Oh, I see. It's fine. Whatever.
It doesn't matter. The point is he's getting a resurgence because of that, which is fine because I love the Black Knight, and I'm glad I read it. I also caught up on Sea of Sorrows this week. I read all three issues.
I read two and three after you put it on the list.
You liked one, so I was like, all right. And then I said, I should probably read. I saw three came out, so I said, I should probably read them. I like it. It's a horror book, but not too horror-y.
It seems like the horror element is the sirens, basically.
Yeah, it's like mermaids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the same thing.
I'd say that
these guys are going for, they're trying to salvage German gold after World War One, and they keep running. Keep running to mermaids, and one by one they're dying. I like it. I did like it. Weird enough.
I think the parts when I know what's going on, I really like it. I think there's other bits. I do a lot of flipping backwards to see who's who, and actually, Rich Duke did a really good job of naming people frequently. And so I could use that name to sort of make sure I know who I'm looking at. And so after a little while, especially having read the first issue a lot longer ago than the second issue, But I had to keep flipping back to make sure I knew who I was.
Yeah, that would be the only thing. I've had the problem of keeping track of the people, but not to the detriment of the story. I was like, wait, that guy, there's the guy with the mustache, and there's that Rip, guy. And
there's the John, there's a, you know.
Girl with the black, the really bad teeth. And
but like at the end of the day, that information was there when I looked for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then my only other problem would be, I thought that I liked the art, but some of the underwater stuff, I had a really hard time. Yeah, it really was. Because it's dark and it's in the ocean, and it wasn't like people moving around. It was like the submarine that's trapped on a ledge, and I had a little hard time following it. So I kind of just gave up and tried to get out of that context, you know, in the next couple of pages. I feel like that is it's a limitation of the kind of story that you're telling in a comic book form, but then also, you know, probably could use a better storyteller or a more seasoned one to sort of get away with that stuff. It didn't make it bad.
It's an interesting conflict, though. There's, you know, on the boat, you have the salvage crew and you have, I guess, mobsters.
Yeah.
It's a little unclear. I guess, does the captain owe only men money?
Someone does. I don't know if it's the captain.
That was also unclear. I was like, why is like that? That was they're sort of unveiling that as you go, but they're
there's the one guy owes the money and he put together a crew, or he became part of the crew, so that the salvage then doesn't all go to the gangster. Everybody is there for somewhat of their own reason. So there's the one guy, and I thought it was a really nice line where he's like, I'm not giving up. I didn't want to say I fought this war for nothing. You know, it's like he's
right. He wants gold out of it. He wants German gold out of his horrible experience in the war. That was the second issue where they had the flashback, which was really good, or was the first issue? I think both, actually. It's fun, though. It's, you know, it's mostly the evil that men do, right? It's, you know, they all turn on each other. They're all turning on each other over the gold. It's the treasure of Sierra Madre. It's, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. In a horror package, which is not overtly horror-ish, and so it works. I like it.
There's rules, and then you break them when it's, you don't, you know, I don't like horror books. Well, what about this horror book? It's not bad.
You know? No, it's all right. Unlike the other one I read this week. That was quick. The Legend of Shang-Chi, number one. Now, it's only a one shot as far as I can tell. But this pains me to say, because you know how much we love Jin Lun Yang, but I thought this one shot issue was more fun and more accessible than the miniseries.
Yeah, it was a heist and a fight, I'd say.
Yeah. It just wasn't bogged down in the lore of Shang-Chi. It was just, here's Shang-Chi having an adventure, and I really liked it. It's Alyssa Wong wrote it, Andy Tong drew it, Rochelle Rosenberg and Travis Lanham on letters, and he's in London, and his ex from the miniseries says, I need help with this situation in the British Museum. There's a sword that you need to get because it's too dangerous to have out and display. When you stab someone, it steals their soul, and he goes to get it, and Lady Deathstrike is there stealing it, and so they fight. And that's basically the story.
Yeah, and it should be noted that, you know, a book that's Shang-Chi, I don't know, is he the Master of Kung Fu? Is that the sort of subtitle for him? A lot of Kung Fu in here. You know, and like, that's what you want from the book. If you got a comic book about Kung Fu, there should be many pages of fighting. And there were, and it was very fun to read in that way. I have my one little bit at the end. She stabs him with the sword. He punches her out the window. He breaks the sword.
Yeah. Breaking the sword saves everyone's souls.
Right. And then he looks up at the shard. And then we see at the end that she's holding that shard. And
it looks like the top part of the sword went out the window with her, because he only has the bottom part when he's holding it.
Yeah, but it's still inside, and she was gone by then.
No, I mean, when he's standing at the window and he says crack and hits the sword. I think the only thing that makes sense is the top part of the sword went out the window.
Right. That is not clear.
Yeah, that wasn't clear.
And I got it. I actually get it now as I was trying to explain it, but I went back and forth over that a few times. Like, I get what the end result is, but it wasn't a little bit.
Yeah,
when we talk about storytelling, though, that's a really good example of you know, that needs to be done a little better. But
yeah,
super fun issue.
Really fun.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I was not expecting it to come out the week after the other one.
I didn't either. I was like, oh, already. Yeah. In fact, I think I just glossed over it because I thought, well, that can't be the. I don't know. I didn't even see it until you put it on the list, I guess.
Yeah, and I looked, and it seems like this is just a one shot.
You know what's funny is that Lady Deathstrike, you know, when she shows up, she's one of those oh shit characters because, you know, like Lady Shiva or, you know, right. Taskmaster, whoever, like she's a badass. And it's funny because she's always had some ridiculous costume or whatever. But here she's just, other than her little half shirt, you know, she's just like in a little tactical outfit to steal stuff. And I was like, oh, I thought she had the creepy hands. And then the creepy hands come out. And I hate the creepy hands. But, you know. That's a pretty lady. Josh... Oh, creepy hands. No, no.
We're going to let Josh ruminate on the creepy hands. And talk a minute about how you can help support I the Fanboy, the show, the ecosystem that you have all unlocked. And we thank everyone who does that. The main way, patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where patrons have done many things. They've unlocked the patron pick, which is a book coming up later in the show. They've unlocked the Talksplodes that Josh does and would like to talk to Tom Taylor on. And then they've unlocked the Booksplodes, which we just did this week, and the Mediasplodes, all those new shows that everybody gets to listen to. They've unlocked them at patreon.com/iFanboy, including the YouTube content we've been adding to the YouTube page. So all that great stuff out there is thanks to the patrons, and we thank them, and hopefully you should thank them if you enjoy those shows. And we have more stretch goals. We have the 80s, classic 80s G.I. Joe cartoon show that we'll do if we hit the next stretch goal once a month, probably, or who knows, and we haven't even talked about it because, you know, it's a ways off. After that, we'll do a barbecue show, an email answering video barbecue show once a quarter, which we used to do in the old days, and it was a lot of fun. Once a quarter is a lot. We used to do it once a year, now once a quarter. We'll have to get our doctor's permission before we do that one. But we'd like to do it, so patreon.com/iFanboy. Also, they get the patron Facebook group, the patron Discord server, great communities that we enjoy checking in on, and there's a lot of benefits to being a patron. You can check them out. You can become a patron for as low as $1 a month. And you get a lot of benefits out of it. So we thank everyone who does that. iFanboy.threadless.com. So you can get our T-shirts, iFanboy logo, Herm, Pick of the Week podcast, ratings of One is Electro, GDAT, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters, and Stay Home and Read Comics. Those are current shirts, and we like them, and we hope you do too. New designs will come as they appear to our brain matter. We haven't really talked about one in a while.
We're not like the writer who works at it. We were the writer who waits for inspiration.
All right, we sit there. We wait. Mm-hmm. It takes 7 years, 8 years for our books to come out.
Sometimes we do other things during that time, which doesn't help. I'm going to admit it right now. That's not, if my main goal is to come up with a new T-shirt, yeah. I think I'm doing everything I can.
No. iFanboy.com/support. That's our PayPal tip jar where you can just throw some money in the tip jar, which people do who don't want to become patrons or buy T-shirts, and we thank them. Everyone does that. And finally, iFanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find links to the Booksplode books as well as a general link to Amazon. And we thank everyone who does all of the above. That's how the show keeps going. The bills are paid. And we get to keep doing the show, which we like to do. And we thank you.
I do like to do the show. That's absolutely yep. true. I mean, I like this part.
the ad read?
Well, no, the part when we... I mean, sometimes. Sometimes. You got to think, why does Mack Weldon keep coming back? Great ads.
The Avengers... 742. I just want to use the legacy numbering.
Always.
Jason Aaron and Luca Maresca. His name I don't recognize. David Curiel, Corey Pettit. I enjoyed this.
That's what I came here to say. Yeah, I've actually kind of dug this little storyline because basically it puts all these different Avengers in a little pocket world, and they have to fight each other, but nobody really wants to win, except there's a couple of wild cards in there.
Shang-Chi and Black Knight in this issue.
I really dug the Captain America Shang-Chi part, you know,
yeah.
where, and there's been this, I've been noticing there's this thing where Captain America has really not been the leader of everything. I know that's obvious in this, but I think it sort of extends to the movies too, is that like, he's the conscience of everything, and he's the soldier who's going to do, like he's your field general. More right. than he's the leader guy, and so he was like, well, this is the guy who should be it. Like he doesn't need to take the reins and be in charge of everything. And I actually really like that. I think it's kind of interesting. The only other thing is that, you know, we always talk about these like legacy things that everybody's trying to put in, like these long mythologies that existed that yep. we never knew about.
Right.
And as long as I ignore that here, totally fine. You know, because I was like, oh, yeah. okay, it's been a- no. No, we don't. Yeah, why do I know her? Oh, yeah. Then the end was dumb.
Yeah. So the Phoenix Force has come to Earth and it's infected. Like Josh said, it sends all bunches of the Avengers to this sort of pocket realm to fight. And they're all infected with the Phoenix Force. So they're all like Phoenixified versions of themselves. And like overall, I'm not super into, but I liked this interaction with all the heroes. The only negative I'll say about this issue is I need some sort of roll call. Because
there's just a
dude with long hair. Who I didn't know who that was. I didn't know who the woman lady in the purple outfit was. Yep. Like, yeah, yeah. I was like
Jane Foster was in there, but she was just Jane Foster, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't know who that was until someone said you stole Thor's hammer, and I was like, oh, that's Jane. Like, I just need some help here.
And then to further complicate things, when they're in the fight mode, they're have all outfits. New outfits. Yeah,
right. So it's like, give me a caption, give me a roll call. Give me a bunch of heads in the cover like in the old days. Give me something.
Who is in the purple? Did we figure it out?
I don't know. Is it Jessica Jones? I have no idea.
Maybe.
I literally have no idea.
I thought it was Kate Pryde.
Is it Kitty Pryde?
I don't think it is. I think it's more likely.
It's She-Hulk.
Oh.
It's She-Hulk.
That's not clear.
No. She-Hulk shows up later on.
The mid-sized brunette woman is the large-sized blonde man in Avengers world. Like, who is that?
We need captions. We need a roll call page. Put it on the recap page. Put a bunch of heads along the side. Mm-hmm. It worked for our dads.
That's how Dad did it.
So, you're not reading Firepower. Speaking of more kung fu, I think you really should. Firepower number 8. Now, having said that, I keep thinking about moving to trades on it just because I think Kirkman reads better that way. But, you know, Kirkman and Somni doing Iron Fist-esque kung fu. And it's really fun. That was fun. Hardly anything ever happens in it where you're like, damn, that's amazing. I need to talk about the show. It's like, that was a great little issue. Mm-hmm. And then you move on because Kirkman's stories kind of move at a breakneck pace, and it's almost like, you know, when you used to read the trades, you never could tell when the issues broke. You know, it just felt like it was one long volume, and it's sort of like that with reading this. It's sort of, you know, another chapter in the book, and I just wanted to mention it because it was a light week, but also it continues to be really fun, and if you're into, you know, if you like Shang-Chi or Kung Fu stories, it's been a really entertaining family in crisis. The father's got to take him back to basically Kunlun because of kung fu inter kung fu problems.
You'll have that.
Yeah, it's been good. So you get the family dynamic stuff, you get the fighting stuff, you get the legacy, you get this guy struggling with his place in the world because he is, you know, sort of a man out of place wherever he goes. It's been really fun, and then of course the Somni stuff has been terrific. So I think everyone should check it out.
I just want him to do a black and white book with no lines, just shadow.
I do too.
That's all I want. He should do Batman black and white, but not Batman just all the time. Just whatever he wants to do that week.
That seems to be what he wants to do because that's all his Instagram feed is.
Mm-hmm.
Strange Academy number 8. Scotty Young, Humberto Ramos. I really like the main girl. Is it Emily? Emily. Hey, look, they got a bunch of heads with names in the front. That's how I know their names.
How Dad used to do it.
Look, so Scotty does it. I like Emily a lot. I liked her scenes with Doctor Strange a lot.
Yep.
There's a lot of characters, and I don't necessarily know them all that well, although you're starting to know them more. Mm-hmm. And there was a funny bit in here where they screw up in spell class and they accidentally clone the giant many
Gus,
times.
Because I'm looking at the heads. That's Gus.
But I really like the scene because, you know, Emily, I guess, is secretly the most powerful one. She's the most sort of normal, like, Midwestern girl. She's not the son of, you know, Dormammu. She's not from Asgard. She's just this girl from the Midwest, and she's the most powerful one. And so she's been involved in a lot of the problems of this series, problems being story-wise, not comic book wise. And so Doctor Strange takes her back to his sanctorum to talk to her and gives her a ring, and she meets Thor, and that was funny. And I just thought she was really interesting. And then of course as soon as he tells her to go back to the school and tells her which door to take, I was like, Dr. Strange, she's a teenager. She's going to go through the wrong door. And she did. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, this was terrific again. And Humberto Ramos is great. But
yeah,
I like that those scenes a lot in the middle.
I think it works really well for the sort of mashup of the fantastic and silly with the sort of bureaucracy, which I don't have to write out, of school. And so like the first scene is Doyle Dormammu, which is really silly just to say every time. Like, sure, his first name is Doyle. Whatever. Doug. He's
I would have got with Doug.
He's in his hoodie, you know, and Dead Girl is therapizing him. And like she has a little manila folder with the clip on it, and there's his face on his chart. And it's very silly. And it's okay. And then Rocket Raccoon shows up in this.
And Groot. We always like when bureaucracy is explored in the comics. Not to an overwhelming extent, but when it shows up.
It is really related to the old, when we did the video shows, how we would like to shoot the people in costume doing mundane things. It's exactly the same instinct. Like there's and then we put those things together and it's very silly.
Look, there's Iron Man at the ATM.
I don't remember what it was, but there was a film. It was like in the early days of like internet fan films, and it was Darth Vader. I think it was Odd Couple. It was Darth Vader and Chewbacca living together. And there was one shot of Darth Vader trying to hail a cab with his briefcase. And it's still one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And I think he doesn't get it. He's like, oh. You have any recollection of that?
No, but that's funny.
See, it's funny. It's just an idea. It's funny.
No, I mean that's a shot for shot up from the Odd Couple.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe
so,
the whole thing was.
Probably. Strange Academy, I think, is really, really terrific.
It is.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. It's a weird light week, but as we mentioned earlier, patron pick, patreon.com/ifanboy. Every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. We had our most number of patrons voting this week. It was terrific.
Yeah, you said that last week, so we're experiencing growth.
Yeah.
Not unlike the 2020 elections. Far less significant, but still a record turnout.
It's still only about 15% of the patrons, but it's pretty good.
It's still embarrassing on a national level as well.
Yeah. So we had a really tight race, mostly because the Discord server tried to band together to pick the book, but they ended up not winning out. They lost by one vote to Man-Bat, number one, the first issue of a 5-issue miniseries from Dave Wilgoz and Sumit Kumar, Romulo Fiardo Jr., and Tom Napolitano. Why is this book?
That's a good question. I will start with my general impression of this, and this will be my review. It was fine. It was actually pretty good, pretty well done.
I thought the art was good,
but I don't care. The art was good. I really liked the Batman, but like as far as like solving a problem of storytelling or exploring a character, that I'm not interested in it. It's the same as the Lizard. I don't really care about that character, which is exactly the same. You know, like
same character. Yeah,
yeah. There's all these analogs that sort of exist in both DC and Marvel, and then eventually some Image book.
Dark Horse. It's the same character as Lizard. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if you know this, Josh, but I'm a big Batman guy. Yes. And but I never cared about the Man-Bat. I just don't care. I just don't care. I've never cared about Man-Bat. Even like I remember one of the first episodes of the animated show was Man-Bat, and I was like, "Oh," even as like a kid, I was like, "Damn it." Mm-hmm. But and I think ultimately it's because like Lizard, I think you just said this. It's basically the same story over and over again.
Yes, it is.
You know, he's the scientist has gone too far with his medicine, and he's the beast calls to him, and he's trapped, and he's addicted to the beast, and
which is in a way the same as Two-Face, but not as interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you get a lot of different variation in Two-Face, but like
you know what I'm saying. But Two-Face's thing is still that like Batman wants to save him, and in there is a good person somehow, but you know the lesser nature of his beasts or whatever. And it's the same. That's exactly the same. But the backstory, everything behind Two-Face is more interesting. It's more psychological. This is more just like, here's this animal going crazy, and you got to take him down and then try to talk to him, and then that doesn't work. But all that said, like I thought it was really well written. I thought.
It's not a bad comic.
No, it isn't. I thought the storytelling was strong. I thought they got a lot done in there. I learned a lot about the character. I thought the dialogue was very good. I liked Batman in this sort of being forced to make the hard choices. I just don't care, and that's not even the fault of the comic book.
No, it's just I don't like Man-Bat.
Yeah. I really like the way Batman was drawn in this. I thought
sort of angular and
tall
and skinny.
Just a little more impressionistic, I think.
It actually looked a little bit more like throwbacky to an other era. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not like this bruiser. I mean, he's muscular, obviously, he's Batman, but he's not like this giant person. He's just sort of like this dude, mm-hmm. Which I liked a lot. He looked almost as a little Mateo Scalera in the Batman, I think.
Yeah, I could see that. That's really good. So what Sumit Kumar is saying, I will not stop it.
And so
that's an old joke. You have to
actually, Mateo Scalera is not stopping it. He's currently drawing a Batman book.
No shit.
The Harley Quinn Black Label one. Anyway, then the cliffhangers, the Suicide Squad shows up, which I don't care about either.
Yeah,
so.
I know. I was like, that didn't help. It's not.
Oh, look, Harley Quinn. So, not mad at the patrons. I did. There was worth in reading it. I just didn't ultimately care. So that means out of 5 stars, I'm giving Man-Bat 2.5 stars.
I was going to say 3, but I think if we're cutting, I'm going to give it 3. I assume that there's people out there who like Man-Bat, and if you do, then I think this is a pretty good run at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know, be aware, you've read this before. You know, like you've done this. I was thinking there was it was a Spider-Man story, and it was the Rhino. I want to say Joe Kelly mm-hmm. wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a very similar thing where, like, he lives with his girlfriend. You know, and there's always a thing where, like, the super weird, you know, super villain has this, like, nice, sweet girl that he's back at home, and then he disappoints her or whatever. And that's, I was like,
Sandman, that's a common trope.
So, again, like, that's been done before, and, you know, but again, the stuff that's sort of planning around, like, she's basically was like, I'm leaving you, and that you're self-centered and you keep doing this, and then she...
And you turn into a bat.
Yeah. I mean, that really is the key. Like, you can say all the other stuff around it. Like, you're not paying attention to me, but really, it's the fact that you're a bat monster, I think.
you shed everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You're scratching up the walls, just constantly screeching. Bringing novel viruses into the house.
We haven't even talked about the guano.
So there's all kinds of problems. It's not just the leaving the toilet seat up and being inconsiderate. It's the screeching.
Yeah,
so let's
go 3.
Are you going to stick with the miniseries? Are you going to read all 5 issues?
No, I'm not.
No, me either. So thanks to the patrons, patreon.com/fan. But I was kind of hoping they'd pick Avengers Mech, Mech Strike, whatever, just because I felt like that would have been silly. But
not enough for either of us to read it on our own. It should be
known. No. I wanted to be forced to.
You know what's funny is because there were so few comics this week, I actually read extra. Like, I read mm-hmm. stuff that I wouldn't have normally, and I went back and I sort of chipped away at some of my backlog. I was like, well, I guess I have time for this now. So I was into reading comics, but there weren't a lot of them this week. But
I cleared my backlog out. It was nice. I enjoyed the backlog.
Yeah, that is always nice. It doesn't feel
so like we said, Patreons, not the Patreons, damn it. Patrons can vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you give it a $5 higher level, you get rewarded on the show live with the superpower of your own. You can take and run with and be free. Like these two fine gentlemen.
Steven Spotswood can instantly relieve any muscle or tendon tension with a mere touch.
Ooh.
No massage, no anything. Like just boom, and it loosens up. It just, and you go back to what you felt like before. It's
the before times. Yeah. When everything didn't hurt?
Yeah. Daddy, pick me up. Here's the thing about that. I would love to.
Yeah.
There's a thing, just tangentially.
4 or 5 spots for Steven.
Tangentially, what I have found is that there's a point when a child is just about 40 pounds and everything's fine, and then they gain 1 ounce, and all of a sudden you can't pick them up anymore. That is the thing that seems to happen. It's right around 40 pounds.
You got to get into kettlebells.
I have it. It's over there. But I have tendonitis in both my arms, and I can't lift it.
Yeah, I got a new desk, and the I'm trying to find the proper height. And it's just the first week, man, both my wrists are killing me. And like right now, if you hold my left wrist This has turned into what hurts segment, by the way.
I was right there behind you.
If you hold my left wrist and I bend it, you can feel the whole thing pop, like the whole tendon just pops. So that's fun. Steven, we need to talk. Henry Hernandez Benavidez.
Great name.
Is immune to paper cuts. You can slash away with paper all day long on Henry. Nothing's going to happen.
Does that include cardboard?
Cardboard is a form of paper, so yes.
Because nothing.
You could stab him with a knife. He's not immune to that. But paper products, can't do it. All day long. Opens letters, no problem. Never gets the horrible. I'm cringing thinking about it. Never gets the horrible, deep slice where you look at your hand and all of a sudden it opens up like a chasm.
Unfortunately, Henry's been locked in the mailroom now because he can't advance in the company. We need you down there, Henry.
So, Henry's
look at all the other injuries. You're saving people's fingers.
And our healthcare costs, our premiums, Henry. Think of the premiums.
There were stains all over the mail before.
Couldn't read it. Those bloody handprints.
This is your calling. And I don't want to be down here.
Can you get me a window? So, thanks, Stephen and Henry, for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can go and give the $5 high level, get your superpower live on the show. And as promised last week, we're going to dive into Dallas's question. I don't think we've ever teased an email like that before.
No,
15 years.
Yeah. We probably. Who knows?
Probably have. He has two questions, actually. Dallas T, number one, says, what specific comic for you is best representative of the decade it was published, 1940s to the 2020s? Do you want to take a crack at it?
You know, you'd think that if we tease something like this, I would have prepared for it better. Let me just say one thing. He says 1940s to 20s. I don't believe that you can not include the 30s.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, you have to. So in that case, you know, 30s is Action Comics number one.
Yep.
I'm going to give you the 40s.
40s would be Batman number one.
Okay. And then you're going to see a theme here. The 50s is Justice League of America number one.
60s is Fantastic Four number one.
Correct.
70s, harder.
Is it...
Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Is that the 60s? That's the 60s.
70s. No, I mean with Cerenko.
Yeah, I think that's the 60s.
Seventies is hard.
I was going to say something like the death of Captain Marvel, or you know, like Conan the Barbarian, or something like that. You know, sort of like that. That's what it feels like it would be to me. Is the Kree-Skrull War? No, that's
no.
I think it's like it's hard to come up. Like I would think it'd be like
Doctor Strange.
Which one? Like Doctor Strange's Steve Ditko stuff was in the '60s.
Yeah, but like they're always again. This is like one of our dead zone periods of comics is the '70s. But like they always talk about like the crazy sort of drug fueled Doctor Strange books.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't really have a '70s.
I'm gonna go with Death of Captain Marvel's probably not even that. You know what? I would like to enlist the help of the community and specifically the patrons, like in Discord or people on the channel, or I mean, people on the website. Let us know if you have a better answer for this, because I'm sure it exists, but I don't know that we're seeing it.
80s is Watchmen. 90s is probably Death of Superman.
Oh, I was going to say.
75.
Sure it's not Spawn?
Could be Spawn.
I mean, it depends on what part of the 90s you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, Death of Superman sort of encapsulates the craziness of the speculation era. Mm-hmm.
As does Spawn, but
Spawn does too, and Spawn also represents the image, you know, revolution. Let's say Spawn for the '90s, and then 2000s is probably the Authority.
Oh, I was going to say Ultimate Spider-Man, but you can make a case for that.
You can make a case for either one of those, or New Avengers number one. You can make a case for all three of those books.
That does change Marvel irrevocably. Well, if that's the case, though, when did Marvel Knights start? Because quite honestly.
It was the 2000s as well.
Wasn't that the 90s, though? Wasn't, because we got Daredevil 1 and stuff. That was in college.
Was it?
Yeah.
Daredevil 1, I thought, was 2000.
I remember getting it at Collectors for Comics for Collectors, though. I think because it was already going. And to me, Honestly, I think that those Marvel Knights books, specifically Daredevil 1 by Kevin Smith and Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti, that really changes Marvel more than anything else, because it signals when these guys sort of do a different thing. They take a Vertigo approach. And right. That, I mean, Marvel was irrevocably changed after that. It leads to the Quesada era, which then leads into the movies and everything. So it's a little bit of a cheat, but I think that's got something.
No, the thing is, there's a lot, you can make a lot of cases. Yes. For that era, and I'm trying to see when this comic came out. Oh, you're right, 1998.
I specifically remember buying it in that store with you guys, so it was right when I started reading again.
And then I don't think you can pick the 2010s or 2020s. We're only a year into it.
Well, I mean, so now I know that I sort of said about mainstream, but I don't think you can ignore The Walking Dead.
Oh yeah, but that's also 2000s.
I know, like you have to get it splits really at that point, because, you know, the industry changes, and at least for Kirkman, the Kirkman Manifesto was correct, and it was only correct for other people for about 5 years, but that's a big deal, and that's not true. I was going to say we've never seen a phenomenon like that, and I was like, that's not true, because there was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And, you know, that's a... I don't know that it's an honorable mention, but it's got to be tied with anything else from that era in terms of a breakout hit that changes things.
Is the
10s?
Is it Century Fallen Sun?
Because it's shitty?
I don't know. I just love thinking about you guys talking about that book. I don't know. It gets harder as you get later. I can't think of what that area represents.
It is indicative of the fact that, I mean, is it the Green Lantern Corps? You know, is it like the Blackest Night? Is it?
Oh.
I think that was before 2010s.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's indicative of the entire world of culture that at this point it's very difficult to pick a single thing, because there is no uniting...
Well, we've talked about that in comics, like Bendis writing New Avengers became like the focal book of the whole thing, and there's no book like that right now.
No, but
like, there's no must read book from either company that like the whole thing runs through.
But that's like, there's no must watch TV show, and there's no must watch movie. You know, even past a week anyway. Like, right. There's no unifying culture wide things, and that happens within comics too. I mean, maybe Scott Snyder's Batman series with like all of his stuff. That's pretty representative of what the
Snyder's Batman might be the 2010s.
A lot of Batman in that list.
Well, he is the most popular superhero for a reason. Yeah. His second question: as someone that began reading comics after the 90s, I often find myself put off by the style of that decade. What are your thoughts on comics in the 90s? In retrospect, are there series for you that stand up to the test of time?
Yes.
The 90s was a very wide decade, meaning there's an early 90s and there's a late 90s
and there's a mid 90s. I mean, there's all those things.
Yeah, it's true. The comics in the early 90s were not Daredevil number 1, 1998. And then also in the middle you had JLA by Grant Morrison,
You had Starman by James Robinson and Tony Harris and Peach Schneeberg. You had Preacher starts in the 90s. You have you know, Vertigo, and then like if we're talking about you're talking about mainstream superhero comics, that's one thing. Are you talking about Jim Lee and Todd McFarlane and Eric Liefeld? That's one thing. But you know, at the same time, what is happening over in Vertigo? Which, by the way, when I mentioned Daredevil 1 and Marvel Knights, they are taking the Vertigo model, and in fact, a lot of those artists and writers and bringing them over to mainstream Marvel Vertigo stuff, and that lays the blueprint for what happens in the 2000s in terms of art and writing in superhero comics. So it's disingenuous in a way to say that 90s comics had a style of art. I think
I mean, look, in the 90s, you had also like the boom of like Hellboy started in the 90s, and Sin City started in the 90s. You had that boom Strange of like Paradise. Outside,
you had,
outside the norm. But you also, you know, things like Kingdom Come came out in the 90s, and so did Infinity Gauntlet. And, Marvels came out in the 90s. Like, there's a lot of classic, great comic books that happened in the 90s. But there was, I think, when people think, you know, Sandman was the 90s. I think when people think of the 90s, they think of, like, the terrible fashions and haircuts, which is true, and mostly in the early part, you know, mullet Superman and all those things. And it's, you know, we talked about earlier, the everyone had leather jackets all of a sudden.
I think that
Captain America wore armor. Like there's a lot of extreme. You even had the extreme Extreme Justice League was a book. Like everything was extreme.
That was
a certain,
and I think that
certain portion of time in the early part of the decade.
And I think that that stuff was also a logical offshoot of the things that were happening in the 80s and the end of the 80s. They were trying to figure out how to push that style and go in a different place with it. And it kind of overshot and it didn't do great. But I think because of that, you had this, you know, the reaction to that was all of this other art. And then you see comic books in the 2000s, just like the art, the style of art that you could do blossomed. I mean, if you talked to Darwin Cook, he couldn't get a job, you know, early on, because they were like, oh, your stuff's too cartoony. Or Mike Ringo.
Well, because they had Mike Parabek.
Yes.
He was sort of the proto Darwin, and they had one of them, and he wasn't that popular.
But they couldn't see him being on, even as late as the in the mid 2000s or late. At one point, we were talking to a very influential creator, and we were like, "Why don't you put this guy on this book?" And they're like, "He's too cartoony; it wouldn't work." And that was very late to say that, and it's clearly not true anymore.
Yeah.
But that's all an offshoot from what happened in mainstream comics early in the 90s. But I want to say, like, it's like talking about music from the 90s. Like, there's a lot, you know. And the first part was definitely dominated by the grungy stuff, then the poppy sort of version of that, and then whatever the fuck happened at the end of the 90s. You know, it's a line. It's not just a book.
The fact of the matter is, you can find an endless amount of terrific 90s comics. Terrific. All-time great 90s comics happened in the 90s.
Yes.
There's also a lot of schlock and terrible things where their editorial is trying to figure out how to get kids to find comics exciting. And then maybe that way is to make everyone really extreme and like Lobo and wearing leather jackets. And
but did you like bad haircuts at the time?
No, I didn't like Mullet Superman.
No, but like there was certain, you know, like I was in love with Todd McFarlane.
But I read all the Image books. I loved all that stuff.
It worked, you know, overall. I don't think it ages particularly well, but that's anything that adolescents like at a given time.
And there's also just the art styles are all over the place, just like every decade. But there's a ton of great comics in the 90s, a ton. We talk about them here all the time. Hey, look, we went super long on Dallas' question, so we'll get some other people next week. contact@ifanboy.com is how you can write in. Thanks for writing in, Dallas. Just like saying it. Dallas. I think that's Hunt for October. Go, Dallas.
What do your parents say when they're mad at you? Dallas!
So, I think I've been to the Ewing Ranch.
Or your boss.
I think I have been to the Ewing Ranch, the one they used for the outside shot.
You're not gonna be surprised to know that. I mean, I know what you're talking about, but I have no image of it because
you didn't watch Dallas when you were
other 7 year olds didn't watch Dallas, Connor.
My parents were from Texas. We watched
Dallas.
We
didn't watch Dynasty. We didn't watch any of the shit. You're like,
we only watched Dallas. We didn't watch Dynasty or Falcon Crest.
Hunter.
I loved Hunter.
Exactly. This is what I'm getting.
Hunter never arrested anybody. He always shot him. Worst arrest record in LAPD.
I wanted
never
to watch
saw him bring
funny
anybody
things,
in.
And I wanted to watch cartoons.
All right, so let's plug some shows.
Shows. This past week was our Booksplode show, where we talk about a volume of comics that doesn't fit into our regular weekly show. And this week was the titled Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics by Tom Scioli. It is a memoir taken from Jack Kirby's interviews and words and put together in comic book form by Tom Scioli, and we talk about it for a while. And it's a lot of, man, this was good. That was real good. So you should listen to that. You should, more importantly, you should get that book.
Yes. The book's out now. The show's out now. Next week, you're going to have the Animation Brain Trust talking about Batman Soul of the Dragon, speaking of more kung fu, 70s-style kung fu action. And then the week after that, I'm just going to go through this, Josh. The week after that, Josh's Talksplode maybe will come out.
Probably.
We don't like to guarantee it until it's recorded in the can. And there are no cans anymore. And then the week after that is the Patron Hangout on February 20th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So if you're a patron, you get the 2-hour happy hour, the 1-hour hangout. And then following that week will be the Mediasplode, which we'll record after the hangout. And I don't know what we're going to talk about. We don't have a topic yet. Oh, we do have a topic. Should we say it?
Sure.
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai
is the main topic for the next media split. I forgot. I got to watch it.
Cobra Kai. I want to say something about it right now, but I know I can't.
I've only seen two episodes. I gotta finish it.
I'll just have to say it in person live, I guess, when we do
it. Save for the show.
Head over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our shows in the past and all of our different podcasts. Go to that special edition section and you will see a vast collection of Books Blood type books and animated series shows and Talks Blood interview shows and a lot of stuff there. So there's a vast history if you want to know about the last, say, 15 years of comics. Someday this will be an archive that people will ignore. And when telling the history, you can go to facebook.com/.
Well, someday we might stop paying the server fee and then it will be gone.
and then where will you be, person who's writing a really niche book that almost no one will pay for? Then you can follow at iFanboy on Twitter or at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. And if you're the guy out there who has at iFanboy on Instagram, come on, dude.
Give it up.
You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out in all those places. And you'll find best of the week in panels, which reminds me, I got something to put up for you this week. You can follow us individually on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan. And you can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/, you guessed it, iFanboy. You can keep up on the old video show re-uploads. This past week, there was a new comics preview from ECCC, Emerald City Comic Con 2008, which is my favorite comic convention ever. That year, that show is my favorite that I ever had. It was guest starring Tom Caters. There's an interview with Mark Millar and Tony Harris and a discussion about comic book villains. I was not there for that Miller-Harris thing.
No, neither was I. That was Isotope.
I did do a Talksplode with him a few years ago. It's probably like 5 years ago now. And it's one of my favorites. So if you could also listen to that.
I no longer have the ability to put things on a continuum. I'm surprised we were able to do all that, those decade-by-decade books, because I was thinking about it when I was reading Black Knight. I was like, when was Roger Stern's era? And I was like, was it the 80s? Was it the 90s? It could have literally been any of them. And it turned out it was both of them.
Yeah, I was going to say it was the...
It was 85 to 95. Yeah. If you like the show...
He was on the book that long? Wow.
10 years. No, I'm sorry. That was Mark Gruenwald and Cap, 85 to 95. Oh. I don't remember what Stern's... I looked it up. I don't remember. Again, no longer possible. If you like the show, please leave a review or star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. For this show, any podcast you listen to, we would appreciate that. It helps people find the show. It helps the algorithms. It really does help any show you listen to, and it's the best way you can do that. So thank you. And even better than that is tell your friends, your family, the coffee person, you know, from 10 feet away or whatever, whoever you see far out the distance, you should shout to them. Or maybe make a little paper airplane. Throw it over and it says, listen to iFanboy. That would be appropriate also. Anything you can do.
So let's say that you're in a World War I situation and there's a trench right. And you've got the Hun on one side and you've got whatever their nickname for the British people was on this side. And it's Christmas.
Yeah.
And like we want to stop the fighting and maybe have a little friendly football match in the middle, which is beautiful. But in the middle of that, you could be like, das ist der Podcast. Der Comic Book. And then maybe that would stop the war.
Yeah, maybe you could have.
It could happen.
We could have stopped the war.
Let me ask you: is it impossible for that situation to take place?
Maybe.
That's a no. It's improbable, but it could happen. Well, I'm saying if you have that opportunity, take it for us.
And the world.
Yes.
All right. Till next week. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
What you don't get it. Love me, baby. No, if you don't love me, woman,